Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
There's going to be a change at the top of the state's Republican Party. Erie County GOP Chair Nick Langworthy has gathered the support of the majority of county chairs and will be replacing Ed Cox in July. The two met with the media to talk about the transition. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Ed Cox, who oversaw the party for the past 10 years and is the son-in-law of former President Richard Nixon, says he's pleased with his new position as part of a team to help finance President Trump's re-election effort.
I am somehow attracted to the presidential elections.
Under Cox's tenure, the party did not win an election for statewide office. Republicans have not held a major statewide elected office since 2006, when former GOP Governor George Pataki decided not to seek a fourth term. Last November, Republicans lost by a significant margin their hold on the state Senate. It now has just 23 GOP members compared to the 38 in the Democratic Leadership Conference. Despite that, Langworthy did not criticize Cox or his leadership skills, and he thanked him for his dedication to the party. Langworthy instead spoke of a game plan to grow the GOP in New York, and he promised to show a new fighting spirit, starting with the state Senate races next year.
We lost this majority in one election. I think we can gain this majority back in one election.
Senator Michael Gianaris is chair of the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee and helped oversee many of the Democratic senators' victories last November. He does not give the GOP much of a chance in making gains in 2020.
He's half right. They did lose the election. Where he's wrong is the possibility that they might take it back. We have a historically large Democratic majority, more than in the last 100 years, and we're expecting a huge Democratic vote in 2020 in response to President Trump being at the top of the ticket.
Republicans face an uphill battle to win seats in New York. President Trump is deeply unpopular in the state. GOP membership in New York has been in decline for decades. Langworthy, who worked for former Western New York Congressman Tom Reynolds and supported Carl Paladino for governor in 2010, says he knows that his first task is boosting enrollment in the Republican Party. But he says he sees a path to winning races, and it's based on economic issues like lowering taxes in the state, which are among the highest in the nation. He says that strategy has been successful in winning several recent elections in Erie County, where Republicans are outnumbered. And Langworthy says President Trump is much more popular than people think.
This is going to be a pocketbook election, and the Trump economy is on fire.
The new GOP chair says his ultimate aim, though, is to mount a serious challenge to Democrats for the governor's race in 2022.
My mission and goal is to get us to the point where a Republican occupies the second floor of the state capitol.
Governor Andrew Cuomo, a Democrat, has not said whether he intends to seek a fourth term as governor, but he is actively raising money for his campaign fund. A senior advisor to Cuomo, Rich Azzopardi, is skeptical of the GOP's chances.
Using Ed Cox's same tire talking points is a great way for a new beginning for the party. That's been their goal for the last 20 years. My goal is also to be taller and a shortstop for the Mets.
Langworthy, at 38, will be the youngest GOP chair in state history. He says he plans to get younger people and women more involved in the party and wants to make it more ethnically diverse. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week, as we just heard from our Karen DeWitt, Ed Cox, now out as chairman of the Republican Party, Nick Langworthy, chair of the GOP in Erie County, New York, takes over. Your thoughts?
It's a bad scene for our friend Ed Cox. Look, he is a Trumper right down to his shoes, but he really is a guy who comes out of the liberal wing of the Republican Party. You know, even Dick Nixon, his father-in-law, and Rockefeller and the rest of the guys, George Pataki, these are people who were centrist Republicans. Look, they weren't the progressive Democrats, but they were centrist Republicans. They're out now. Ed Cox has had a series of devastating things happen to him professionally. He has to put up with the fact that they haven't won an election in a long time. So along comes a conservative from the Buffalo end of the state, and he's, you know, you have to go because you haven't produced. You know, he's had a long and wonderful ride. They give him a post in the Trump campaign, but nobody should be fooled. This guy Langworthy is the real Trumper in this situation, and I don't expect that he's going to have a lot more luck in 2020 when this presidential election comes up, but there'll be state and local offices going wildly against Trump just in terms of a protest. So they may have changed their leader. I don't know what it's going to do for them.
Alan, this week, New York lawmakers have given final passage to legislation that would allow President Donald Trump's state tax returns to be released to congressional committees that have so far been barred from getting the president's federal filings. Democrat-led Senate and Assembly approved the measures this week, sending them to Governor Andrew Cuomo. A spokesperson for Cuomo says he supports the principle behind the legislation but will review it and be careful before deciding whether to sign it. It's had some people criticizing these moves in New York, like columnist Chris Churchill from the Albany Times-Union, saying as upstate withers, Albany focuses on Trump.
Look, this is a blue state. Not everybody in it is blue, but it's a blue state. It's a Democratic state, and the passion is great, and the passion should be great because this president is acting in the most unpresidential of ways, and ways which are reminiscent of, frankly, dictators and others in the past. He is saying, basically, I'm above the law. I won't do my job and have infrastructure reform. And people want some resolution here. They want to say to this president, do your job. You're subjected to investigations. We know you don't want those investigations, but it's too bad, because if you've done something, you're going to have to be held accountable for it. Well, that's what people in New York think. That's what people in California think. That's what people in Connecticut think. That's what people in Massachusetts think. And it is not that they think it marginally. They think it mightily. And so they are instructing their legislators to do something about it. And in New York, they've come up with a creative way of doing something about it. Now, the bill goes to Andrew Cuomo, and he has to decide whether to sign it or not. We don't know what's in his head. We don't. The one thing we know is that when leaders who are on the other side of popular passion don't want to do something, they find an excuse for doing it. We've seen it 1,000 times. There's a comma out of place. There's a paragraph that should be earlier. There's a tiny bit of inconsistency, no matter how small, between the House and Senate versions of it. Some way of saying, no, I'm for it, but I really have to veto this because it isn't quite right. Well, if Cuomo does that, he's going to have to be subjected to the voters, but not for a long time. And in politics, you know, 3-4 years is a long.
This week in Albany, sexual abuse survivors joined representatives of 2 law firms in releasing the names and photographs of more than 80 clergymen in the Diocese of Albany accused of sexual misconduct. The Diocese in Albany disputes the report. The release comes as cities and states around the country come to grips with sexual abuse in the Catholic Church. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas.
The law firms of Jeff Anderson and Associates of New York City and Lefebvre Wine & Framont, PLLC of Guilderland, produced a report they say reveals the identities, histories, photographs, and information on the clerics, all accused of child sexual abuse. Jeff Anderson.
The Catholic bishop in Albany has already released a list of some 47 under some pressure. The number of those we've released here today is 83. A large number of the names yet to be known are priests in the Diocese of Albany accused, but there's also a number of priests who are members of religious orders that have never before been disclosed.
Mark Lyman says he was abused by a parish priest in Troy.
The abuse was extensive. Over many years, It had a horrible impact on my life. And as a survivor, I want to empower other survivors to step forward so that we can make this state stronger than ever, and we can make sure that we protect children and that this type of abuse never, ever happens again.
Bridie Farrell grew up in Saratoga Springs. At age 15, she was a nationally ranked speed skater who was sexually abused by teammate Olympic medalist Andy Gable, who was 33 at the time.
The point of us coming forward today, the point of us calling out these names, the point of us asking for accountability is so that, yes, people like myself and these others can heal and move forward, but it's to change the culture so that the systems that are youth serving are going to be safer for children.
The survivors are demanding full disclosure by the Diocese of Albany and the religious orders involved regarding all clergy accused of sexual abuse who worked in the diocese, including their current whereabouts, photographs, and histories. Many of the clergy listed in the report have died, but others' current whereabouts are unknown.
This is not anti-Catholic. This is anti-crime. This is not against these individual people in calling this a criminal ring. This is to hold an institution accountable that facilitated child sexual abuse. So does it skew our faith or our where we came from?
Again, Jeff Anderson.
We know that the Catholic diocese and the Catholic bishops across this country, whom we've sued, every single one of them, in the last 30 years, that they have permitted crimes of clerics to have occurred and given safe harbor to it, to them. We also know that they've engaged in practices employing protocols of secrecy that have allowed the top officials to be complicit in participation of some of those crimes. We are not calling the Catholic Diocese of Albany a criminal enterprise. We are calling on them to do better to protect the kids and reveal the truth today.
The Albany Diocese responded to the press conference in a statement on its website, writing, "Bishop Scharfenberger has been a national leader in bringing justice to survivors." And there are inaccuracies on the list, names on the list that have not been found credible, many religious order priests over whom we do not have jurisdiction, and others who are not alleged to have abused in the Albany Diocese, including at least one who never served as a priest in the Albany Diocese. You can read the full statement and view pictures of the 83 accused clergy at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Rallies were held around the country as abortion rights advocates have spoken out against recent state bans like a restrictive new law in Alabama. Meanwhile, in New York, five Planned Parenthood affiliates plan to merge into one entity called Planned Parenthood of Greater New York. And the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood New York City will assume leadership of the new entity. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
In an interview, Laura McQuaid discussed the proposed merger and her new leadership role.
So this is a strategic move that has been in the works, this particular merger, for 2 years. Conversations about what's the right strategic organization in New York State to provide the highest quality care to the most patients has really been under conversation for a number of years. So this is a strategic move, and we are proactively coming together. Again, this is not a crisis merger. All five affiliates are strong financially and have a really solid healthcare footprint. But we really fundamentally believe, given the direction that healthcare is going, that together we can offer more and better not only to our current patients, but to a significant number of patients that are currently getting care nowhere.
For example, she says the proposed merger would help streamline resources.
the whole idea of coming together was to bring the best of all five organizations and free up dollars that are being duplicative, right, to invest in new services, new locations, you know, improving the patient experience. And also, for example, you know, so say someone lives in Poughkeepsie and goes to NYU for college, right? Currently, they come down, and although we are all Planned Parenthoods, they really kind of have to start over with us, right? They walk through the door, they say, oh, I'm a Planned Parenthood patient in Poughkeepsie, but we still have to treat them as a new patient. All of this will allow us to go on one instance of electronic medical records, which means that that very same patient will come down and go into one of our centers here in New York City and have a seamless experience, no transfer of files, no re-registration.
The five merging affiliates are Planned Parenthood of New York City, Nassau County, Mid-Hudson Valley, Mohawk Hudson, and Southern Finger Lakes. This leaves four affiliates in New York independent, and the new entity will partner with them. Planned Parenthood of Greater New York will include half of New York's counties, covering 65% of the state's population. She says the merger is not a vehicle for cutting jobs or closing centers.
So the majority of people in the organization will not experience change. There are no health centers currently slated for closing at all. And in fact, I'm not at liberty to share now, but there are several locations that we have already identified for being in need of additional health centers. We are looking at ways to expand telehealth opportunities, right? We're trying to meet patients where they are. And, you know, 92% of millennials, regardless of socioeconomic status, have a smartphone. They live their life on a smartphone. And we need to find better ways to meet them there and give them that high-quality experience that they come to depend upon in a Planned Parenthood center. They should be able to get that through telehealth and online as well. So, no, this is not about coming together to cut centers or to cut jobs.
Meantime, organizations including Planned Parenthood are participating Tuesday in a national day of action called Stop the Bans, fighting back against recently passed abortion bans in various states. This hour, there is a flagship event being held outside the Supreme Court in Washington.
It would be unrealistic, despite this fantastic merger opportunity that we have here in New York State, not to address what's going on across the country. Alabama, Georgia, Ohio, Missouri, Kentucky, we are watching this play out, and we're watching people take advantage of their current legislative structure in order to try to generate a case that they think will be the one that will restrict access to abortion at the federal level. And what are we doing? We're coming together as a federation because, you know, many of us face those situations, and then many of us are in states like New York where we have an obligation to provide all the support that we can because we have such strong support for sexual and reproductive health services here. And so what that looks like in the immediate term is we stand in partnership with them in raising our voices for the incredible threat that patients find themselves under across the state. And then we talk about preparing for the future, right? So prepare for the future and hope it never comes, but we have an obligation to figure out how patients in states where sexual and reproductive health care will be limited can get to states where it is invested in, it is believed in. And so some of the reasons around the merger as well is with the understanding that we may be facing not only serving more New Yorkers, but also serving patients from outside of New York. And we are very focused on that, both for ourselves in New York and in working in partnership with our sister affiliates who are under incredible stress right now.
McQuaid has noticed an uptick in anti-abortion efforts.
It was a very important year for New York this year, right? We passed the Reproductive Health Act in January. We passed the Comprehensive Contraceptive Coverage Act in January. Pieces of legislation, frankly, that we waited decades to pass. And as a result of that, I think that we are seeing people elevate their voices more loudly than we have previously. But I think that, again, we are standing strong. We commend the governor. We commend the Assembly and the Senate for their members standing strong, for what is right for New Yorkers. But I think that we would be foolish to say that there has not been an uptick since the Reproductive Health Act was passed in January. We see it in front of our health centers. We see it in the media.
McQuaid is looking for action on another item.
Comprehensive K through 12 sexuality education in the state of New York. We have almost no requirements. I mean, there are some requirements. They're, let's just say, not doing quite enough to ensure that people have the access to information they need and deserve.
Laura McQuaid is president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of New York City, which is planning to merge with four affiliates in New York. She will then assume leadership of the new entity, Planned Parenthood of Greater New York. If the merger is approved, it would launch in early 2020.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Ahead of the summer travel season, victims of work zone crashes are encouraging drivers to move over and slow down for roadway workers. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King with more.
Employees of the Thruway Authority, State Department of Transportation, and State Police stood beside the busy thruway in a damaged police vehicle to tell their stories on Monday. At the Gilderland Service Area on the New York State Thruway, Thruway Authority Executive Director Matthew Driscoll says roadway workers and emergency responders risk their lives day in and day out to keep drivers safe.
We have a very simple message today, and every day, actually, and that's that distraction can wait. Whether it's a phone call, a text, you're fiddling with the radio, whatever it is, it can wait.
Just a few months ago, Driscoll says a tractor-trailer struck several maintenance vehicles and injured four Thruway employees during routine maintenance on the Berkshire Spur. All of the crew made it out alive, partially due to crew member Jay Case, who tackled a coworker out of the vehicle's path. Case says they're lucky they survived.
As a result of the tractor-trailer coming into the work zone, my foot was broke. And I still have flashbacks of that incident. We aren't there to ruin anybody's day or slow down traffic. We're just real people with families. I have three kids and a wife, and I'd like to go home at the end of the workday to see them.
According to State Department of Transportation Executive Deputy Commissioner Ron Epstein, two DOT employees have been killed this year by drivers who failed to move over. He says these crashes, like the one that killed DOT employee Matt Howe, are particularly painful because they are preventable.
I wish I can say that Matt's passing was just, you know, a isolated event, but I cannot. Matt is one of 56 DOT employees that have actually been killed in the line of duty since DOT was created.
Ron Robbins is an assistant bridge maintenance engineer who narrowly survived a crash on Route 9P by Saratoga Lake a few years ago. While installing plastic delineators to mark a one-lane work zone on a bridge, Robbins says he stopped against a guide rail to avoid traffic. He says he thought he was safe, but one car, instead of driving across the bridge at a given signal, barreled straight toward him.
My legs were between the guide rail and the car. I jumped up at the last second, and the car clipped my legs and threw me over the guide rail backwards. The car continued on and hit the guide rail and then just sped off. As I was laying on my back, I looked at my feet and my legs, wondering what I was going to find, and thank God I was okay. I got up and the driver was gone.
State Police Troop T Commander Major Doug Kyer says speeding is the number one cause of fatal accidents in New York, with distracted driving causing the highest number of physical injury crashes. He says both can keep a driver from moving over, and that not only threatens roadway personnel, but state troopers as well. Trooper Thomas Hannigan was assisting a disabled car near the Thruway's Kingston exit in March when a tractor-trailer suddenly crashed into his vehicle.
I felt the impact of the car. I saw the truck go down the side of my car, hit the car in front of me, causing the guy to go over the guide rail. He had a female passenger with him that was outside the car. She got pinned up against the car. My airbags deployed, side curtain airbags. I'm watching her as she's like looking at me, yelling for help, and I can't get out of the car because the door is smashed in and out. At this point, my car is up against the guide rail.
Hannigan says the occupants of the other vehicle also survived the crash, but he adds it's not the only crash he's seen, calling distracted driving senseless.
Thought I was dead that day. I thought I was dead. I have a family to go home. We all have families to go home, and it's just, there's no reason for it. Everybody should move over, slow down if you see lights, any lights, whether it's police officers, tow trucks, any type of emergency lights, even a disabled vehicle on the road. If you see them, give them room.
Commander Kyer says state police will be on the lookout for distracted drivers over Memorial Day weekend.
We're going to be engaging in our traditional Memorial Day traffic enforcement. We'll be paying attention to distracted drivers, speeders. We will pay particular attention to those who do not move over. So if you have the ability to do so, please do it.
Reporting from Gilderland, I'm Jesse King.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1921. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.